You know, recommendations can be great. Maybe someone recommended this podcast, and here you are. But home projects are different. If a podcast isn't your thing, you lose a few minutes. If you hire your cousin's neighbor to mount your TV, you might end up with a lopsided screen and wall damage. Maybe I know a guy just isn't enough for your home. That's why Thumbtack works. It matches you with top-rated local pros with photos, reviews, and credentials all in one place. For your next home project, try Thumbtack. Hire the right pro today.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
And your home for Royals baseball.
Fastball hit high in the air, deep left field, way gone into the bleachers. A two-run homer for Bobby Witt Jr.
Watch The Drive by subscribing on our YouTube channel or listen on demand with the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is always going to stand on principles. Dippin' Dots are incredible. Red Lobster is the best restaurant that America has to offer, and baked beans are trash.
You're listening to Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan. Here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Really excited to be here with you guys on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. We basically have a half of show to get after it today. We got a lot to get into, even in the abridged version of the show. Every team in the NFL was thrown out for a potential breakout player. We'll tell you who that was for the Kansas City Chiefs. They have now moved on to the top 10 defensive tackles in the National Football League, also on ESPN. We'll let you know where Chris Jones potentially lands on that list. So there's a new rule in college football. You will have 5 years to be eligible. That means Avery Johnson, if he wants to, can play one more season at K-State. And then play another season at Kansas State. He was asked if that is something that he is considering. We'll play that for you as well. We got a little bit of World Cup. We continue what is my favorite soap opera right now in the world of sports, which is LeBron James and what team he could potentially play for. Speaking of soap operas, we usually wouldn't lead the show this way, but starting the show at 3:47, it's a little bit different than what it usually is. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this today, so this is where we usually would slot it into the show. We might as well just do it now off the top. Rob, did you know that a group of lawmakers wrote a letter to the WNBA commissioner? Did you know that? Yes. There were 11 politicians that wrote a letter to the commissioner of the WNBA, and they were demanding that the league take accountability for multiple attacks against Caitlin Clark. It also went on to say that she is the face of the league. She has generated incredible fan interest, TV ratings, corporate sponsors, and she continues to be, their words, not mine, on the receiving end of unnecessary physical hostility and violence, such as hip checking, eye poking, and recently the incident with Alyssa Thomas. It also goes on to say that these attacks against Caitlin Clark may be racially motivated. And if they continue, that these lawmakers are going to seek an appropriate investigation by the Department of Justice, the Department of Labor, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And if this is true, that these attacks are racially motivated against Caitlin Clark, then they would constitute a violation of federal civil rights laws. This feels like a really good first question to ask on the show today. Are we okay? Why do we discuss Caitlin Clark in this way? In a way in which we don't discuss any other player in American sports. Now, do I think that race plays a factor in the conversation about Caitlin Clark? Absolutely. on both sides of the aisle, on both sides of the coin when it comes to Caitlin Clark. But what really frustrates me about her and what makes her very different to me than any other American athlete that we discuss is we've never evolved past that with Caitlin Clark. From the moment that Caitlin Clark, I would say, was introduced to the public and the back and forth with Angel Reese, every conversation that we have about Caitlin Clark makes her more of a cause than an athlete. And that flies in the face of who I think Caitlin Clark wants to be. I think Caitlin Clark is a lot of good things. I think she is a lot of great things. She is one of the most exciting athletes that we have, regardless of color, regardless of gender. She's a lot of fun to watch in all of this. But I think her actions have made it very clear. She is not interested in participating in these conversations, nor does she want to be viewed through that lens. She just wants to be a basketball player. Now, I'm not saying that she should be more involved in these things or she shouldn't be. That is her decision as a person. But I think it is pretty clear now in the 5 years in which Caitlin Clark has been in our lives, 2 years at Iowa, because people didn't really start picking it up until she was a junior. This is now her third year in the NBA. We've never talked about Caitlin Clark the way that we just talk about a basketball player. At some point with basketball players or most players, it just shifts towards their game. We don't even have to talk about it in basketball. This is kind of how it started with Tiger Woods. The fact that somebody that looks like Tiger Woods was dominated in a sport where no one looks like Tiger Woods was a really big deal. But eventually, our conversation started to shift from, hey, this black guy is playing golf. It eventually shifted to, maybe he's the greatest golfer that we've ever seen. What does he need to do to catch Jack Nicklaus? And we started looking at it through that prism. We've never evolved in the way that we view Caitlin Clark. We've never evolved in the way that we discuss Caitlin Clark. I think this is on everybody. I don't think this is just the politicians' fault. I don't just think this is the players in the WNBA's fault, nor the fans, nor the media. We all participated in this. This had a chance to be a really good, really fun story. One of the more unsuspecting stories in sports that I can remember. You could argue that Caitlin Clark is the most popular American-born basketball player. There has never been a time in basketball history in which you could make that argument about a female basketball player. You couldn't make that argument about Cheryl Miller. You couldn't make that argument about Lisa Leslie or Rebecca Lobo or Diana Taurasi or Sue Bird. You've never been able to argue that the most popular American-born player was a woman. I think that's the case now. She's more popular than Jason Tatum is. She's more popular than LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards or any other player that you can name. Why have we done this with Caitlin Clark? Why? For a country that loves to say that we look past these things and how evolved we are, Caitlin Clark is an example that we still got a long way to go in these conversations. This is nonsense to me. And it will continue to go with what I was saying about Caitlin Clark last week. I don't know why we advise everybody else to stand up for Caitlin Clark, and we are not giving her the message of she needs to do a better job of standing up for herself. Because you know what doesn't help Caitlin Clark's cause in any way? Is 11 politicians coming together and saying that if you don't start being nicer to Caitlin Clark, we're going to seek the Department of Justice about you. That's one of the reasons why they don't like her. You wouldn't do this for a male athlete. You wouldn't do this to Victor Wembanyama. You wouldn't do this to Jalen Brunson. It just frustrates me that at this point, we have let Caitlin Clark be used as a vehicle for people's beliefs, more so than just talking about her like a basketball player. Whether you think that her game can translate, whether you think that she's good enough to help win a WNBA championship, we don't discuss Caitlin Clark in that way. Every conversation is she is being slighted in some way and that the other girls in the WNBA should be so happy that she decided to play with them that they should just bow at the altar of her. Every conversation. This is our fault. We did this. This had a chance to be really, really good. It's not. I don't know if we can evolve past this point when it comes to Caitlin Clark. We haven't in the 5 years that she's been in our lives. I don't know what would really happen to make us wake up tomorrow and be like, you know what? Maybe we should start treating her the way that we treat Joe Burrow or the way that we treat Josh Allen or the way that we treat Scottie Scheffler, I don't know if we can get to that point with Caitlin Clark. It feels like we are way too far down the line. All right, we'll reset things coming up at the top of the hour. We'll get back to local. Local businesses are still complaining about the World Cup. It's almost over. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with prominent Mizzou fan Carrington Harrison.
I support Kansas. I want Kansas to win.
On 96.5, The Fan.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
All right, let's reset things. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here. Rob is here as well, taking you up until 6 o'clock. All right. This should go without saying, but I feel like it's a really important way to kick off the show. I am for all small businesses. I want to see everybody win. Why would I not want to see people win? It goes without saying, but I'm a little frustrated at the news that we continue to sell these stories to the public because we know that this is red meat to the public. This is irresponsible in my mind to continue to keep sharing these stories. There was one that came across my timeline. I saw Bob Fesco talking about it. I planned on talking about it. This came from KSHB 41 News. This is a bar owner in Platte City, Missouri, complaining about not seeing a boost from the World Cup. Here's the story.
After years of preparing for one of the world's biggest sporting events, the World Cup has filled Kansas City Stadium, FanFest, and bars across KC. But north of the river, it's been a different story.
We thought maybe we'd get a little bit just based on proximity to the airport.
As the Northland reporter, I spent months talking to business owners preparing for this event. For Laura Lowry, owner of Barley and Vine in downtown Platte City, that meant bringing down extra TVs, creating World Cup themed drink specials, and even extending business hours.
It's fun on a USA game, but other than that, the TVs are on and no one's watching them.
Lowry says she believes location has played a big role, being 30 minutes away from where the World Cup activities are taking place.
The people who are coming to Kansas City, they're coming to watch the game and to be a part of these World Cup events. So us being 30 minutes removed from that definitely takes away our opportunity to participate in anything like that.
Yo, what are we doing? I hate to begin the show this way. I have so many questions. I don't have anything against this woman and her business. I've never heard of it. I've never been there before. I'm happy to stop in. Rob, it's 30 minutes away from the action. Do we think in New Orleans, when it's Mardi Gras, we're interviewing restaurants 30 minutes outside of Bourbon Street, asking them why they're not seeing a big boost in tourism from the event? What are we doing here? Why are we talking to this person? She thought she was going to see a boom for the France-Morocco game 30 minutes away? From who? Who is driving to Platte City to watch these other games? Yes, for the U.S. game, sure. I'm sure you get your locals that don't want to drive into town and decide to stay out there. If you're in town for the World Cup, why in the world would you be driving 30 minutes outside of town to go watch the game on television at a Northland Platte City area sports bar? Is this what it's going to be every time that we get something really cool in town? Is this what it's going to be like for the Super Bowl? I'm serious. Is this what it's going to be like? Somebody in Independence, Missouri is going to be interviewed by the news because they didn't see a huge boost in their business. Now knowing that it's going to be 40 minutes away from the stadium. Why are we doing this? Why are we selling these stories? Who is the intended audience for these stories? Who wants these stories? At this point, I think everybody would agree with these two statements. Visit KC or whomever overestimated the amount of visitors that were coming into Kansas City for these soccer games. Whatever the number was, 650,000, whatever the number was, you should have known a year ago it was BS. We all knew that. If you were watching the news or paying attention, you knew that that number was not correct. So if you were operating your business like you were going to get that level of foot traffic, you made a terrible mistake. I also think it is going to be very difficult to sell it to me as somebody who's been to P&L, who's somebody who's been to FanFest, as somebody who has been to a World Cup game. It's going to be very difficult for you to sell me in 2 weeks when this is over that this was a negative. I'm sorry, you can't sell it to me. I've seen it. To quote Jay-Z, you can't sell me BS. I know the prices. We just got to start understanding that the tourists have made a decision. So when we get more touristy things, maybe you'll get a political convention. I believe we're going to get the World Cup, or not the Super Bowl one day. I believe we'll get a major wrestling pay-per-view. I'm sorry, but your Olathe sports bar is not getting a boost because WrestleMania is here. What are you doing? Why do we think that? I'm tired of the news continuing to sell these stories. We got one more game on Saturday. It should be fantastic. Lionel Messi could be playing in his last World Cup game or continuing to advance to get his second consecutive World Cup. He might win the Golden Boot. It's going to be sold out. It's going to be lovely. It's going to be beautiful. There's only two cities in the United States that got more World Cup games than Kansas City. But we got to quit packaging this same story about this French coffee shop down in the crossroads is not seeing a boost from the World Cup. It's intellectually dishonest. What do you think, Rob?
I mean, everything you're saying is spot on. And also, I don't mean this as any disrespect to the business owner. Did they really think that having specialty cocktails and extra TVs was going to bring people in? Like, I think their location is the killer. But I think one thing I'm learning about the World Cup is, if you were willing to be around the stuff and cater to World Cup fans, you probably got World Cup fans. Like, I've been to bars down in Crossroads. I've been to bars in the plaza. The places that have signage up and flags and all this stuff to indicate, hey, it's World Cup Central, those places are experiencing a boom. But if you're in Platte City and you're telling me I got specialty cocktails, no one who's staying in, you know, Riverside where, or up by the Berkeley front where Argentina is staying is driving to Platte City for a specialty cocktail and an extra TV. You got to do a little bit more. You got to be a little bit more proactive. So it's not just be where the tourists are. If you're going to be there, that's great. But if you're not going to be there, you have to give them a reason to come out to your business. And we're seeing things like Kick It in KC was not a good enough thing to have people come out to be part of, leaving the fun area. I hope this one's business does great with Platte City residents, but no one was going to leave downtown ahead of the Netherlands match after the Orange March to go get a specialty orange cocktail before their match with Tunisia. That wasn't happening. And if it was, you didn't let these people know it was even an option.
The text line corrected me. This company, the one that we're talking about, it's called Barley and Vine. Now go support Barley and Vine. I'm happy to go out there. I'm happy to meet this woman, shake her hand, and hey, sometimes the game's the game. You decided to talk to the news, you became content. I'm sorry. Rob, this is a wine bar that offers a wide selection of craft beers, whiskeys, and wine memberships in Platte City. You couldn't have thought that you were going to get some massive boost from the World Cup. What's happening here? Come on now.
If anything, that bar should have done a really good job of pandering more to their regulars. Hey, we're not going to get a boom, so let's make sure our regulars show up. That actually sounds like a fun bar. I like wine. I like, you know, craft beer, especially cocktails. That place would be for me if I lived in Platte City. You should be making sure if a Platte City resident likes that place, they should be coming in more, not trying to entice some random Dutch fan who lives in the Riverside for a month. No, pander to your locals.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, two things can be true. This has been a net positive for the city, but also folks bought into the hype by the mayor, Visit KC, and KC 2026 and all other officials, and it didn't live up to their expectations. I said that. I agree with you. I guess I'm saying is there became a point long before the visitors got here that their estimates were wrong. It did not just catch up with you in the middle of June that they lied to us. I've been saying that on this show for months. I've been saying, hey, the math ain't mathing. If you've been paying attention to this, the flights are not adding up. The hotel rooms are not staying. All you had to do was watch the news. Hey, FIFA just canceled a block of hotel rooms. Hey, the flights, this is like a normal summer in Kansas City. We've been talking about it on this show for weeks now. If you don't live downtown, you are not affected by the World Cup at any point. You haven't been. There's only a handful of bars that are doing the 24-7, 23-6 rule. Like, what are we doing here? So, yes, I 100% agree with you. This has been an overwhelming net positive. But if you thought that your Independence bar was going to see a big boost from the World Cup, that was a great thing to think in 2024. If you were thinking that in March of 2026, I'm sorry, that's a you problem then at that point. You just weren't paying attention. You just weren't keeping up. I'm sorry, you just weren't keeping up. Or you just didn't want to believe it. All the information was right there. At some point, that's a you problem. You were a business and you made a bad business decision. That's life. I'm about to tell you. That's life. The tourists have decided where they want to go. So we now have this information. We're going to get a Super Bowl. It's going to be great. Now, it's going to be a little bit different because it's going to be in Kansas, and we don't know where people are going to populate. But I'm guessing that the tourists, if they're going to travel, they're going to travel to downtown Kansas City. They're going to travel to Power and Light. I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that's where the stuff's going to be. Some of the stuff. Some of the stuff's going to be in Wyandotte County. Some of the stuff's going to be close to the stadium. But I've been to the Super Bowl three separate times. I've been to Radio Row. I kind of know. I'm a tourist. All the touristy stuff. That's where the tourists are going. So I'm tired of these stories. They make me angry. They make me upset. I just don't see the purpose for them. I don't know who they serve. It just gives people an ability. It just gives people an ability to throw shade on the World Cup. And I just think it's unnecessary. It's been great. It's been phenomenal. It's been fantastic. It's amazing. Hopefully you've enjoyed it while it's here. Someone on the text line says, talk American football. You know what? I'm happy to do that. We'll do that next. Keep it right here, it's The Drive.
The Drive is always streaming live on our YouTube channel.
If you're a bad tipper, that's okay. You're all right. I'm not here to judge you for that.
Just search for 965 The Fan.
You ever heard the story of Harry? He was a legend around here. Until one afternoon, he left and never came back. Turns out, Harry went and made himself a website using Squarespace. Used Squarespace domains to buy artisanseatcushions.com. And he built a beautiful site with an online store to sell his artisan seat cushions. Now Harry's sitting on a fortune. And if our Harry can do it, anyone can. Build your business at squarespace.com. Use offer code EVERYTHING for 10% off your website or domain.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, somebody on the text line said, talk American football. I'm more than happy to do that. Coming up in a little bit, I got a chance to catch up with Danny Parkins earlier today. We will play that for you. Happy to do that. Always great to catch up with my guy, Danny Parkins. All right, so these are the two things I'd like to do before we play our conversation with Danny Parkins. First thing is, on ESPN right now, every day they are going through a different position, and they are offering up who coaches, executives, scouts, etc., who they think are the top 10 players at a certain position. They are currently at defensive tackle. Here's who they have as the top 10 defensive tackles in the league. Number 10, Jordan Davis. Number 9, Milton Williams. Number 8, Zach Allen. Number 7, Dexter Lawrence. Number 6, Quinnen Williams. Number 5, Derek Brown. 4, Chris Jones. Number 3, Jalen Carter. 2, Jeffrey Simmons. And number 1, Leonard Williams. He plays for the Seattle Seahawks. Rob, are you surprised that Chris Jones is still viewed as a top 5 defensive tackle by those in the know in the NFL?
I am not surprised. Chris Jones, whether it's name cachet or game or a little bit of both, is very highly regarded in league circles. It is similar to me with the way that Chiefs fans view Trent McDuffie, where I think the view locally and the view nationally are not the same. Chris Jones is no longer Leonard Williams. He's no longer on a trajectory to be Aaron Donald. He's no longer the best defensive tackle in football. There are better ones now. But he is, if the kids were doing the S tier, A tier, whatever, he is one tier down from the best of the best. It does not surprise me he is viewed that way, but I'm betting locally it does shock because he is graded on a more harsh curve in Kansas City.
So let me read to you the little blurb that they have. Quote, he is still a guy that you need to game plan for, but you don't feel him as much as you used to. I think that's a fair assessment. I think most Chiefs fans would agree with that. He's still a very, very good player. He doesn't feel nearly as dominant as he did in years past. Quote, but he's been one of the best for a long time. It then goes on to say, Chris Jones posted an 18% pass rush win rate, topped amongst defensive tackles. He had 7 sacks last year, led the NFL in pass rush wins, etc. Some evaluators thought that Chris Jones needed his snaps reduced after 2024. And that Kansas City would benefit from reducing that number slightly to keep him fresh. He played 762 snaps in 2025. I do think, and no one wants to hear this because of how much money he makes, I do think that Chris Jones is on the field too much. And I think it would be in their best interest, and it would help everybody if you sort of reduce his minutes, so to speak. You know we love a cross-board comparison. You got Chris Jones playing 35, 40 minutes of an NBA game. You probably need to get that to 25 and 30 if you want to get the most out of him and keep him fresh. I do think some of the issues that we run into with Chris Jones at this stage in his career is you play him too much, he gets tired at the end of the game, so that motor's not running the way that it used to. They would do themselves a world of good if they could take some of that responsibility off their plate. Now, you got to develop those other guys, but you have spent the resources over the last couple of years either drafting defensive tackles, a guy like Peter Woods, either picking up a defensive tackle like you just got, the guy from New England whose name is escaping me on the top of my
Tonga.
Head. Yeah, Kyrus Tonga. You need those guys to start stepping up where on first and second down, you feel comfortable enough with those guys being on the field. And then on third down, when it's the money down, you bring in Chris Jones and tell him to get after the quarterback. That could help Kansas City greatly. I then started to notice this. I would say right now, other than Mahomes, because your quarterback's in a different category, all the guys on their team that you would consider to be top five in their position are guys that are either potentially in their last year on the team. A guy like Travis Kelce, I imagine he's going to be a top five tight end in the league. Chris Jones, who's a top five defensive tackle in the league, or a guy that you feel doesn't play a premium position. Yeah, Creed Humphrey might be number one. He plays center. Yeah, maybe you think Nick Bolton's the best middle linebacker in the National Football League. I mean, he's not great in coverage. He's not a guy that's going to get you a whole lot of sacks. So, I mean, it's great to have that player. Not saying he's a negative to have, but all of the guys that you would consider to be their elite high-end talent, it used to be at tight end. We used to think they had the best pass catcher in the league. They used to have the best deep ball, deep weapon threat in Tyreek Hill in the league. Chris Jones, at one point, he was the best defensive tackle, and he was that at 31 years old. Now, it's a little different. All their top five guys are either potentially in their last year like Jones and Kelce, or they just play a non-premium position. And that's why I will continue to say that's what they need more than anything. Rob, we might disagree about this guy. What they really need is Mansoor Delane to turn out to be a star. What they really need is Peter Woods to be that guy, or Mason Thomas to end up being one of the better young pass rushers. How they built themselves a dynasty was, yes, getting it right at the quarterback position. They had stars. They had a top five safety in the league in Tyrann Mathieu. They had a top five defensive tackle in Chris Jones. They had the best tight end in the league. They had maybe the best wide receiver in the league at one point. Snead, at one time, people thought was maybe the best corner of the league, or certainly in that conversation. They got to get back to having elite high-end talent. You don't do special things without having special players. They don't have a lot of special players under the age of 30.
And something that you hit on there that we also agree on, and the way you acquire those players is in the draft. Like, it's great to add Kenneth Walker, who I know came up in at number 9, and he's, I think he just turned 25. His exact age, I don't know off the top of my head. it's great to acquire that player. He's a good player. But the easiest way to acquire star players who are under 30 years old is the draft. So for better or worse, it falls on Delane. It falls on Woods. It falls on R. Mason Thomas. It falls on, hey, Rashee Rice, stop getting arrested. You still fit in this category. You were a guy who was drafted. Xavier Worthy, it's time to shine. Like, do something. Like, their first and second round picks in this Mahomes 2.0, 3.0, whatever you want to call it, they have to become stars. Karloff's has to take a step forward. Like, that's how they continue to be a dynasty. They will always be a good team because they have 15, but they're going to get back to their dynastic ways. It has to be drafting stars because paying for them gets very expensive very quickly.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, having to put your highest paid defensive player on a snap count is wild. Somebody else says, CDOT, you have to give us a reference. 750 out of 800, then I'd say yes, rest them more. But 750 out of 1,100 defensive plays, I'd say that's about right. So last year, the most number of snaps on the Chiefs defense was Chamari Connor. He played in a little over 1,000, 1,022 snaps. Nick Bolton was in second, 1,012. Chris Jones played 762 snaps. He played in 73% of the defensive snaps that the Chiefs had. I just think that's a little bit too high of a number for a guy who's 32 years old at that position. Like, I know the money and I get all of that, but we also got to be realistic here. We're talking about a guy who's 32 years old, who's played a decade in the National Football League, weighs, what do we think Chris Jones weighs, 280 pounds? And we're asking Chris Jones to play 73% of the game. I'm just not surprised that either late in games or late in the season, that guy runs out of gas a little bit. I say this, and I understand that some players defy this. Man, football is a young person's game. Football is a game that is best played between human beings between the ages of 22 and 28 years old. Certainly at certain positions. Quarterback's a little bit different. But if you got a defensive lineman who has been banging up against other human beings now for over a decade in the league, we're not counting college, we're not counting high school, we're not counting all of that. Those miles just add up on your body over time. And I think that's very clear what is happening with Chris Jones. I'm not saying you got to use him 30% of the time, but having him be on the field as much as George Karloftis, even though he's 6 years older than George Karloftis, it explains why I think you see some of the gaps in effort from Chris Jones at times.
I also think the Chiefs saw this too. Now, maybe the Chiefs were thinking this the last year of Chris Jones, or maybe the second last year of Chris Jones, based on how his contract is going to work. But they drafted Peter Woods, who's a defensive tackle. They signed Kyrus Tonga. Like, they have begun to think about life after Chris Jones and how to balance and get the most out of Chris Jones. We talk about this on offense all the time with Travis Kelce. He can't be your number one target guy anymore. That time in his career has passed. For Chris Jones, at another taxing position, that time of being Aaron Donald has passed. You can still be valuable, be helpful, and be a disruptor. You just have to massage it to get the most out of him with where he's at in his career.
Just to give you an example, I understand that every team is different, right? I get that. I completely understand. Chris Jones played about as many snaps last year as Byron Murphy did for the Seattle Seahawks. About as many snaps as Byron Murphy, who's a very, very good player, who was on the honorable mention right on the outside. He was 11 this year. Byron Murphy's 23 years old. We're talking about a defensive tackle that's a decade older than him, and they're on the field the same amount. So I just think that stuff matters. Again, I'm not here to make excuses for Chris Jones. I do think we just got to be a little bit realistic. The fact that the Chiefs have not developed a number two and number three, and they are asking the same of Chris Jones in 2026 that they were asking of him in 2016. They're asking the same of Travis Kelce in 2026 that they were in 2016. It explains why last year we started to feel like the Chiefs were a little bit long in the tooth. They got to just start developing some more guys who are in the prime of their career and are playing at high levels. And when they were winning championships and winning Super Bowls, that's what they had. Kelce was in the prime of his career. Tyreek Hill was in the prime of his career. Mahomes was playing some of the best football we've ever seen. You got to redevelop those superstars. You got to find new characters for your television show. They just don't have a whole lot of new characters.
I think they need to do that while simultaneously making sure they maximize what they have left with those players. Like, thinking of use Tom Brady's Bucks for an example. Tom Brady's at the end of his career, and so was Rob Gronkowski. How did the Bucks use Rob Gronkowski? It was not the same way the Patriots are using him in 2017. It was different. How were the Bucks using, one of these aging veteran guys who came to Tampa Bay to win a Super Bowl with Tom? they handled it differently while simultaneously leaning on their stars. Now, their stars were Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, what have you, but they didn't ask Leonard Fournette to touch the ball 350 times that year. They got the most out of Leonard Fournette. That's what the Chiefs need to do with the players they have under contract that are veterans. Get the most out of Travis Kelce. Get the most out of Chris Jones while simultaneously developing the next player to fill that gap, because you have to understand they are not forever Chiefs anymore.
Text line 913-586-7965. So let's move on from this. This was a text that we got yesterday, and I wrote it down and I saved it because I knew we would be in this moment that we are in. So we were talking about George Karlaftis yesterday and how he did not show up at all on people's top 10 pass rusher list. He was not an honorable mention. He is not talked about outside of Kansas City. I was making the point of, if the Chiefs defense is going to be able to hit their ceiling on what they can be, I'm not saying that George Karlaftis has to become a top 5 pass rusher in the league. It'd be good if we looked at him like a top 15 pass rusher in the National Football League. That's something that they could desperately use. Somebody texted in and said that they thought I was off. Hey, we don't need George Karlaftis to be dominant. We just need him to be productive. Rob, is that a statement that you would agree with? Because I actually disagree with it. I think we have to put into context, I don't think that you need George Karlaftis to turn out to be Max Crosby. But the Chiefs have dictated that George Karlaftis is somebody that they see as a part of their foundation. We always make the argument of you can't pay everybody, that you got to let guys like Trent McDuffie go and you got to make decisions on who you want to pay and who you don't want to pay. They made a decision that they see George Karlaftis as a emerging young talent, that they see him as a foundational piece for their defense. Well, then you need him to be a disruptor. Like, I don't want to get caught up in the weeds of trying to hold him to some arbitrary numbers that can move, but George Karlaftis needs to be a presence in this game. He needs to wreak havoc. When you watch some of these other teams with these elite defensive lines, you see they have one or two guys that you got a game plan for, you feel like you got a double team, or there is a guy on the other team that when we're breaking a game down over the course of the week, you think, hey, we got to do a good job against him. I assure you that when the Chiefs are playing Buffalo, they are not thinking about what are we going to do to stop George Karlaftis this week. That's the kind of player that he needs to turn into. He needs to turn into someone who can disrupt what the other team does offensively. That's just not what he was last year.
So to answer your question and the text line's question, it's going to take some nuance here, because define productive. Because I do think the Chiefs can be okay if George Karlaftis is productive. We just have to define what productive is. I do not need him to be Brian Burns from last year. I do not need him to be Danielle Hunter from last year. Those were 15, 16 sack a season guys. I don't need him being Aiden Hutchinson at 14 and a half sacks. That's probably too high of a ceiling. But, and maybe this is, we're saying the same thing, and the text line just says it differently too. He can be a 9.5 to 10.5 sack guy. That level of production, I think the Chiefs will be okay. If he became what Montez Sweat was for the Bears last year, who had 10 sacks, if he's what, you know, Alex Highsmith was for the Steelers, 9.5 sacks, if he's that type of guy and every once in a while, you know, pops up and has a Byron Young 12 sack season, great. But he doesn't need to be Aiden Hutchinson 14.5, but he's got to be sniffing double digits, which would put him as a top 15 pass rusher in the league. And that level of productivity is all the Chiefs are asking from.
I don't disagree with you, but I guess to bring this conversation full circle, and it goes along with the top 10 list that we were talking about, is then if that's not what he's going to be, that's fine. Well, then you need two of those guys. Then you need three George Karlaftises. You don't need one Aaron Donald. That's not what I think Seattle has on their defensive line. They don't have a guy that you think is maybe the best arguably ever at his position. But you know what they got? They got three or four very, very good defensive linemen that you feel like you can get pressure with just your front four. We can't sit here in October and November and having conversations about how Spags can dial up blitzes and how Spags has to be creative at getting pass rush. No. You need your first round picks, your second round picks, your second and third contract guys. You need them to be able to generate pressure with that front four to help out that young emerging secondary, and they don't need extra help and protection. We would agree. I think you can be the most diehard Chiefs fan possible. Their secondary is going to need some help. You got a lot of young guys who just haven't played a whole lot. Mansoor Delane's never played in the league. Noel Williams played half a season last year if you're going off the snaps. Their secondary is going to need some help. If you got to use those guys to help generate a pass rush, and now you got Shamari Connor, and you got Jaden Hicks, and you got Mansoor Delane one-on-one on the backside of your defense, barbecue chicken alert. Everybody knows it. So again, I'm not saying here that you need George Karlaftis to turn into Max Crosby. You need your front four to be able to hold their own, and you need a couple of these guys. They need to develop into stars. That's how you win Super Bowls. We can go through the last 7-8 Super Bowl champions, Kansas City included. We thought Kansas City had the second best defensive tackle in the league when they were winning championships. Look at Philadelphia's front four. Look at their defensive line. Look at Seattle's defensive line. Look at the Rams when they won the Super Bowl. Look at Tampa Bay's front seven when they beat Kansas City up in that Super Bowl 6-7 years ago. That's what you got to develop in Kansas City. And they have spent the draft pick compensation to try to do that. You spent the second round pick on R. Mason Thomas. You spent the first round pick on Peter Woods. You just gave George Karlaftis $90 million. Hey, it's time to start getting those guys together all on one page. And maybe not in year one, but by year two and year three, when you spent those level of resources, you need to start seeing fruits of that. And that has to be, you got one of the better front fours in the league.
To that point, I'm looking at the stats from last year. The Seahawks were 9th in the NFL in sacks last year. Not the best, but they were 9th in the NFL in sacks. But when you look at their individual statistics, no one had more than 7. It is clear, now, whether Brett Veach wants to call it this, whether they're going to acknowledge this was the plan, the Chiefs defense is built like the Seahawks conceptually. They don't anymore have that dog. They don't have Danielle Hunter who's going to get 15. They don't have Myles Garrett who's going to get 23 or whatever absurd number he got. But looking at the Seahawks, Nwosu 7, Leonard Williams 7, Byron Murphy 7, DeMarcus Lawrence 6, Jaron Reed, that's a name from the past, 3, Nick Iwuemurmi 2.5, Boye Mafe 2. It was just
a bunch
so
of dogs,
many
for
people.
Sure. A bunch
and
of dogs.
You look at the Chiefs defensive line, that is what they are trying to recreate. They don't think George Karlaftis is a 14 sack guy. They think he's 9, though. They don't think Chris Jones is the 20-sack a guy he sees anymore. They think he's an 11 guy, and then you get R. Mason Thomas to pitch in
with
4.
Five.
Yeah.
Yep.
You get, you know, a blitzing linebacker to pitch in with, you know, 3 or 4. You get Peter Woods to pitch in with 3 or 4, and suddenly you're top 10 in sacks again, and you don't have a dog, but you still are one of the better pass rush units in the NFL.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll hear from Danny Parkins, our guy. He is on Fox Sports 1. We'll play that for you here coming up in just a little bit. So I want to play this audio for you. So there is a new change in college athletics. I'm sure there will be a different change by the next show that we have. But right now, the NCAA has instituted what they are calling a 5-in-5 rule. So very simple. From the moment you step on a college campus, you have 5 years to play college sports. You can redshirt if you want, nothing stopping you, but that is one of your 5 years. Now you got 4 years to play college athletics. I am all for this rule. I think this is a fair medium. I'm cool with them having more than the 4 years and playing five. What I'm not fine with is a guy who's on his 7th year and he's on 5 different teams. I don't like that. I don't think the public likes that. So a player locally who could greatly benefit from the 5-in-5 rule would be Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson in the old rules would be a senior. He is not a senior anymore. He could come back next season at K-State if he wants to. Someone asked him, hey, have you thought about this? Is this something that you've given any consideration at Big 12 Media Day? Here's what he says.
If I needed another year to play college football, it's something I'd look into, but it's not something I've talked to my family about or even something I've thought of this year. I'm kind of more just focused on the season, so kind of just see how the season goes, and I'm looking forward to the season and excited to the season, and that's something that I think we'll all just deal with after.
I'm not saying Avery can't have a great season. I'm not. K-State fan, I don't want you on your Go Power Cat. I don't want you yelling at me. Oh, Carrington said, no, I did not say that. I've watched 3 years of Avery Johnson. He's completing 58% of his passes in college football. Maybe he takes a big jump this year, but I'm going to guess he's probably not turning into a first-round pick or a second-round pick in this year's draft class, not with how strong we perceive it to be. He feels like a day-three pick at best to me in the National Football League. If your choices are to be a fifth-round pick in the Dolphins or keep being the quarterback of Kansas State, you will make way more money being the quarterback of Kansas State. So I don't need him to think about it. I'm telling you what will be in your best interest. Keep playing college football. As long as they'll let you play college football, I'd keep doing it if you're Avery Johnson. That's the best job you can have. You get to be the man on campus. You get to work with Colin Klein. K-State should be good this year. We'll see how good they can be, but I think they could be an 8-9 win team. I think this is a great situation for Avery Johnson. I don't think he is going to the NFL next year. I don't think he should. Could he be a 7th-round pick by somebody? I mean, maybe, sure. But I feel pretty confident in saying there is no job that Avery Johnson can take that will have a greater earning potential than him being a college football quarterback next season. So I would stay. Whether it's at K-State, whether you transfer somewhere else, I would keep playing college football as long as they let you keep playing college football. This upcoming season, get your completion percentage up, have one of those dynamic monster years, go into year 5 as the preseason pick for all Big 12 quarterback. Those are the things that I'd be focused on if I'm Avery Johnson and getting this team back on track and getting back to a bowl game. That's what I would do if I'm them. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get you ready for this weekend and the World Cup. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison, the go-to show for dating advice you didn't ask for.
If you got to ask your girl to help on the bill on Valentine's Day, you've done something wrong.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, The Fan.
I want to spend just a little bit talking about the NBA. I want NBA teams to have a little bit of dignity. Listen to this report from Shams about LeBron. This is real nasty work.
And one interesting wrinkle that has occurred in the last several days is some of the leading suitors for LeBron James, whether that's a Golden State, a Cleveland, Miami, Minnesota, Philadelphia, some of them have been able to send a voice note to LeBron James via Rich Paul. So whether it's an owner, a president, or a general manager, being able to record a voice note, I'm told, send it to Rich Paul, and that makes its way to LeBron James. This is just a part of LeBron James's process of studying as he makes the decision. He has not been in a rush. There's been no timetable that he's been operating under. I'm told there's been a lot of family time, friends time, golf, of course, over the last couple of weeks. The last two he's spent in the Akron, Ohio area, including with one of his close friends that he grew up with in Brandon Weems, who's now one of the leading executives of the Cleveland Cavaliers under President Kobe Altman. So the process continues, and it's unclear whether Cleveland or Miami have been among the teams that have sent a voice note to LeBron via Rich Paul. Again, they kind of don't need to. They already had him in their buildings in the recent past.
Hey, what are these NBA teams doing, man? It's just been a show of confusion. I just don't know what's going on. I will say, LeBron, if there's one thing we know about him, he's going to milk this time. This is the last time that LeBron has our interest, at least about what team he's going to play for. I don't want this to go like it did for Aaron Rodgers. You remember, there was a time we really cared about what team Aaron Rodgers played for. He went into that darkness retreat, he came out and he said that he was going to go on Pat McAfee's show, and we couldn't wait. Hey, what are you going to do, Aaron? You going to retire? You going to go play for the Jets? You know, that was an interesting time. Aaron Rodgers took a little bit of time this offseason, announced he was coming back, announced it was his last season, and we hit him with the Mike Tomlin. We do not care. Nobody cares that this is Aaron Rodgers' last season. Nobody cares. Not a single person. LeBron, I don't want that to be you. Now, I know you're not Aaron Rodgers, but you get the point that I'm making. Come on now. Just go back to Cleveland, man. Go home. Go back to Cleveland. Announce this is your last season. Get your farewell tour. Get your final send-off. Get loved on by the fans. And let's just call it a night, man. That's what I want for LeBron.
I'm utterly confused by this voice notes thing. What are these?
Can you imagine sending a voice note to another? I mean, I just.
But it's to send it to Rich Paul to give this to LeBron. That's like passing notes in class.
That's weird to me. Like, can you imagine, like, you're a 57-year-old man. You're sending voice notes, and now you're sending them to him, and you're saying, make sure LeBron gets this. Like, you got to have a little dignity, bro. There's no way you want me to believe this is what Pat Riley's doing. There's no way you want me to believe this is what Eric Spoelstra's doing. This sounds like Minnesota to me. That's what this sounds like. This sounds like something Joel Embiid would do. Not the Heat. Not you. You think the Steph Curry's doing this? You think Draymond's doing this to try to get him to play for the Warriors? You gotta have some dignity about yourself. This is nasty work.
What do you think the voice notes are saying? Like, let's say you're let's use the Sixers or the Nuggets, for example.
Thinking about you.
Hey, you get who's the owner of the Stan Kroenke. let's say Stan Kroenke, who's like 75, 80 years old, I believe. They say, we need you to send a voice note to LeBron so that he can begin to study our team. What do you say? Hey, we have Jokic. I mean, there's nothing you can say in a voice note that you can't already have him know or already have communicated. This is just very goofy behavior by Rich Paul and LeBron James. And Shams was like, this is part of his process. Well, it's a stupid part of his process. It's a bad part of his process. And clearly it's new to his process because this was not the case any of their times LeBron has left home.
I want to read something to you. So one of my friends, she works at Power 105.1. Shout out to her. Her name is Evening. And, you know, they have like, you know, radio stations that always have like topics in between the music or whatever, right? So today her topic was, in dating, what's a bigger red flag? Is it someone who responds too quickly or someone who responds too slow? So it was, a quick response means that you're thirsty and a slow response means that you aren't interested. And it was like a poll question for people. They were calling in the radio and they were offering up opinions. Now, I didn't call the radio station or anything. I'm not that interested in the topic, but I did send her a message and I said, very simple. If it's a penalty now to respond too quickly to a text, like I understand replying too late to a text. Like if you text a girl good morning and then she replies to you at 6 o'clock at night, I certainly understand how over time that could just turn you off and how you're not interested in talking to her anymore. Like I get that. That makes sense to me. Rob, you're telling me that you could send a young lady a text. She replies to you and then she gets mad that you replied to her too quickly. This is all confusing. Our generation might be cooked. I've thought this for some time. The evidence has certainly been there that we might be cooked. If there are women out here, if there's young ladies out here that see you replying to their message as a negative, what are we doing here? Again, this is just a show of confusion. That doesn't even make sense to me. I get how you can be too slow. I don't know how you can be penalized for being too fast. I understand how you can be in trouble for sending too many texts. We've all had the person in our life that just, they just send too many texts. And you're like, I'm overwhelmed. Like, what are we doing here? We're both at work. You sent me 9 texts. I can't read all this. I don't have the time. I can understand being mad at somebody who replies too infrequently. Like, I just don't talk to you enough, you know? Like, I want to have a little bit more interaction. You asked me how I was doing. You're mad that I quickly replied to your message? That's weird to me.
I had the exact same thought. I was like, actually, my actual thought was, thank God I'm married. Because if it is a penalty to respond quickly and it's like a red flag, what are we doing? I get the bad response. That one is the obvious answer to me. If you get a text or you send a text that, even not even a good morning text, if you send a text like 11:30 in the morning around lunch, and you get a response at, you know, 9 o'clock at night, that's bad. It's infrequent. It's slow. I get it. That's problematic. But you're telling me I text you at 11:30, you text back 11:35, and I respond at 11:38. I'm a problem because I'm trying to engage in conversation. That's wrong.
I'm telling you, it'd be too many rules, bro. These rules only exist if you're not really interested in that person. Like, you know how they say, like, there's a difference in, like, flirting and harassment, and it really just depends on how much the person likes you? I feel like that's the same, too. Like, wait, we just had a really good date, so I call you the next day, and now that's a negative that I called you? Like, what are we doing here? Then you didn't really have a good time, then. You know what I mean? Like, this doesn't make any sense. You text me. You started the conversation. Now you're mad that I engaged in the conversation? This is weird. And then creates too many, well, when can I reply? No, just show interest in this person and then hope that that person shows enough interest in you back and you guys have reciprocal energy and you guys can move forward in a relationship. This is dumb. I don't know what's going on with people today. That's really the theme of the show. I just have no clue what's going on with people. Coming up on the other side, we will reset things. The World Cup is on. That's what they tell me. I would know, but I don't know how to work the television. I have no clue how to work the television. Rob will update you on what is happening in the World Cup. We'll also catch up with Danny Parkins. There's a lot to get into. Keep it right here. So drive.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out. Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.